That's kind of a big secret. I don't know if we can talk about that.
You're right, Jeff. We can't.
So Jimmy Pardo says hi to you guys.
Oh, yeah. You did the podcast Sunday.
I did the Never Not Funny podcast on Sunday from the beautiful Comedy Attic in Bloomington,
Indiana. I still have yet to go there.
It's an interesting room. Think of it as two parts of a triangle. You're standing on the stage, and one leg goes out that way, and one leg goes out in front of you. But here in the middle, there's a wall and, like, the kitchen and things. It's an interesting room, and it, what, about 150? Oh, you've never been there.
I have.
I didn't have a mic there.
I won't be there next week.
No, that's right.
Thanks to Josh Arnold.
Josh Arnold kind of put the screw job on him as far as I can understand it. But is that a banana?
Yeah, it's my banana.
I got to start a list.
Or are you happy to see me?
I need bananas. And I got jelly.
You're really doing this right now.
I am.
You're really doing this.
I'm writing this down. Should we start the Todd?
No, not yet.
Todd, what's your favorite musical group?
I just asked.
Do you have one?
Oh. Via text. Oh.
Who do you listen to there? And who'd you listen to there in Chevyville? No L.
I'm so bad at music, but I like I listen to Eric Hutchinson. Those
I've heard of him.
So I listen to that Pandora channel. So everybody, you know, I like that kind of music.
Does Chris Stapleton pop up on there? Do you like Chris Stapleton? Is Eric Hutchinson country?
I know I'm supposed to.
I'm
like
horrible
Chris
at
Stapleton.
Identifying artists with songs. Man.
Okay,
I am the worst.
This might be the earliest we play a song.
Okay.
To start the podcast, but I'm going to play this one.
All right,
let's see if this one rolls.
This is Jimmy Buffett.
This is Jimmy Buffett.
This is Jimmy Buffett.
You like Jimmy Buffett?
Is this really Jimmy Buffett?
It sounds like
it's Eric Hutchinson.
Is it Eric Hutchinson?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I like him. Hi, welcome to the Chick McGee Show with Eric Hutchinson and Jason and Jeff and our guest this week, the one, the only... comedian, American hero, Todd McComas. Hi, Todd.
Hey, buddy.
I cannot believe it's a pleasure for you to be on the podcast.
I can't believe we haven't had him.
We've never had him. Didn't have him on the old show with me and Jess, and didn't have. We've. How can that happen?
Here's the thing, too. This is our last podcast. I didn't get it out when we did it. That was our 250th podcast. With Jake Johansson.
Oh, wow.
Combining all of them.
This is 251, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. That was something else.
Like the Simpsons.
They're up to 600.
Only better than the Simpsons.
I said it.
Should we have a meeting right now and decide how many episodes we're going to do every week?
No.
No matter what?
No.
I vote Monday and Thursday. What do you say?
That's fine.
Doesn't work for you?
That's what we've been doing.
What do you say, boy?
I want to hear what Todd says about
it. Okay. What's Todd going to say about it?
Monday and Thursday sounds good to me.
Monday and Thursday sound okay, right? What do you think of my studio in my new house, huh?
This is awesome.
Isn't it nice?
Yeah. Is this your first time here?
Yeah.
Oh, you were out of town when we had the party.
Yes, we wanted to invite you, but you were gone.
You were on stage or out of town or something.
You remember me inviting you to the party, though,
yes,
don't you?
Yes.
I don't
yes.
know if I did or not.
Yeah, I think you did.
I didn't invite Grace. I totally spaced her, and I will forever be sorry that I forgot to invite her. And she probably still says something to you about it, doesn't she?
She's bitter.
No comment.
I'm not real organized when it comes to life. But some things – see, that's where I get tricky.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I'm real organized, but then other times – that's what my two youngest kids used to tell me when I was really trying to be a father instead of bless her heart, my oldest daughter. God, I was a shit father. But I actually saw some pictures of me and my oldest daughter like a couple weekends ago, and every picture I'm holding her. And I had no idea that I wasn't as bad a dad as I thought I was there. I had the official.
That can happen.
Right?
He was yelling, could someone take this baby from me?
Take this thing away from me. No, but I
He's
had.
He's holding the baby.
I have got to get. She's supposed to send me copies of these. But I am holding her with my porn star mustache.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm about 100 pounds heavier. And I'm not wearing her shirt. She's just wearing a diaper. She's like a year and a half, and I'm holding her both arms in front of me, peeking around behind. It's the most white trash picture I've ever seen. No shirt, pair of shorts. It's just hilarious.
Jean shorts?
I think I would. Could have been wearing shorts.
Never had a pair of jean shorts.
That might have been about around the time I had the car repossessed.
Oh, where you had a car repossessed?
The Chevrolet Vega.
Really? What happened there?
The Vega hatchback. Well, if you don't make payments.
Turns out
they'll come and get it. I think I was, that was Jenny. So I was 20, 21.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, what are you, 26 and a half? 26 and three quarters.
You ever had a car repossessed?
You ain't had a car repossessed.
No.
Did you have to go
There's
repossess?
Still time.
Did you repossess cars with the sheriff's department?
No, never.
Anything like never. That?
I've had a car repossessed. My wife got her Cadillac repossessed.
See?
A couple times.
Your wife had a Cadillac?
My ex-wife, yeah. She had a Cadillac CTS. And she was making fat money at the time because it was during the mortgage boom. She was a loan officer.
Ooh.
And then things, that big crunch hit, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, no more money. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And mm-hmm. then somebody came and got the Cadillac.
You know what, though? Wow. I mean, they want to do everything but come and get your car. I will tell you that. I mean, they gave me fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh chances. They just said, You're a fucking lunatic.
Were you there when they took it?
How does
the transaction go down? That's what I want to know.
She called me one day. She was like, I think somebody stole the car.
That's exactly how all the scenarios.
And I was like, are you sure? Because remember, they kept sending and calling and running payments. And I was like, we don't have money for it. So your car is the last thing they get covered.
Right. We went to a bar instead of make the car payment. Right. That is so that's so true. You seem like the most straight-laced.
No, I mean, listen, I'll be honest. There was a time where a credit card was a little too heavy.
Oh, yeah.
And this is without kids.
Out of your,
I was like, what are we doing? We got two incomes?
You know, we need to write this happening? Down. We need to have Pete the Planner back on because very interesting. You need to listen to me because you're going to benefit from me being older, okay?
I'm listening.
Boy. they have found that, you know, you see these commercials now where you could get your credit report for free and all this stuff. Uh-huh. And all this banking apps and things like – studies have shown that people spend like, I'm going to say 100% more money if they have access to how much money they have and their credit score, and they'll run shit up. I mean,
and they don't see the money.
Yeah, and that's they don't the see it. Right. It all just becomes numbers, but they can keep track of it on their phone.
I have credit karma.
Oh, do you?
And it's an addiction. I'm constantly looking at it and trying to see how high I can get my score. So
it's a video game.
Yeah, it's like a video game.
Yeah, isn't that? I mean, I think that's
really odd.
Fascinating.
You're the first person I've ever heard checking their credit score.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. That's amazing.
Yeah, I can tell you exactly what it is right now.
Okay.
According to Credit Karma. But also a friend taught me
mine's
a little
228. But I've been divorced three times. So
that'll hurt it.
Yeah, mine's. You know, if you're not married too, it hurts it.
Yeah, I think so.
Like if you don't show that you can keep a commitment, you.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Tommy?
Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, a friend of mine taught me a trick, said, hey, if any negative things on your credit report, if you just dispute them once a year, just once a year toward the end of the year in December when these credit places are at their busiest, dispute every negative thing on your report, and 9 times out of 10, that company will not respond. And within time,
they'll just take it off.
And they'll take it off your credit report.
Nice.
And I did it, and it worked. Oh, yeah.
Honest to God,
everything that was negative
cheating
on my report.
Nice.
Yeah. Sticking it to the man. Yeah. That's what this podcast is all about. Damn right.
How to cheat the system.
Oh, man. Well, Todd has been through. Can I ask how old you are?
45 years old.
You are 45 years old.
Woo!
Now listen to this. How long were you in the Marines?
Well, I was a reservist, but I got activated. So I did like a year and a half active duty.
So you
and
were
the rest
in,
was reserve
you were
time.
Watch this, guys. You were in country.
Yes.
For how long? And where were you?
Well, there was during the first Gulf War,
Desert Storm, or whatever. Todd, really?
Yeah, and they sent me to Norway.
You were probably 18, weren't you? Were you 18, 19?
I was 19.
Yeah.
You went to Norway?
I didn't go to the theater. They actually put me geographically as far away from that war as possible.
Okay.
I was in Norway for that whole war.
Did that reflect somehow on your quality of service?
I think so. Like, obviously, they.
Well, if it was a reservist, you know.
Yeah, we were filling gaps. Like, we got activated, we got our shots, and they're like, hey, you're going to go to Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, or somewhere to stage. And, you know, we were a military police unit, so, like, you're going to go over and handle prisoners. So we had a mission, we got our shots, we packed all our gear. And we sat in Cherry Point, North Carolina for 2 weeks, waking up at 5 o'clock every morning and sitting on a parade deck waiting for a plane to come get us for 2 hours. And then they would stand down, and we just went on cleaning detail for 2 straight weeks.
No shit.
So finally they were like, all right, rotations are frozen. What you're going to do is fill in for active duty personnel in Beaufort, South Carolina. So we go there. And I was like, well, this sucks. And they were like, well, anybody want to go to Norway? And I was like, yeah, I'll go to Norway. And, yeah.
Seriously, my show of hand?
Froze my ass off.
Okay.
February, Norway, and we were 500 kilometers above the Arctic Circle in February. My
God. Beaufort, South Carolina is beautiful, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool. You're between Hilton Head and Myrtle Beach, Charleston, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, between the two. Yeah, it was a cool place.
So why did you decide to go into the Marines? Were you mad at your dad, or did you just like –
Yeah, I was
because you're idiot. You're a smart guy, right? I mean, but you didn't go to college.
I was an idiot. Well, I did. I was supposed to go to University of Texas first. I got accepted UT. There, right,
Austin,
for advertising.
Welcome,
no
and
kidding.
Then I had a baseball scholarship offered to Vincennes University.
You were a good ball player.
Yeah, I was a pretty good baseball player.
What was your position?
Shortstop, second base.
I was just gonna say all the best baseball players are shortstop.
Yeah.
Did you ever play baseball, Viv?
I did.
What'd you play?
I was catcher.
Oh, that's
you were a big, brawny catcher?
I was the first catcher to ever successfully pull off a triple play in
Little
League baseball.
Foul tip.
Foul tip, catch it, throw it over to first, got him out. Foul tip, catch it. The runner on third came way far off the bag, didn't think I could catch it.
Tagged him,
and threw it over to first and got him.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
This was as a Fisher's Tiger, though.
Oh, right? And this was as people were like, the other bench is like, oh, he's too small to play catcher. I was tiny. I was like 5 feet tall and 20 pounds.
You were killing it.
And then I let my big dick hang after that. Give me some of that big league chew.
Okay, so you graduate from Shelbyville High School, and you decide to go in the Marines.
Yeah, I was supposed to go play baseball at Vincennes, and I just didn't show up. So I was like, well, my parents
Why didn't you show up? Oh.
And I don't know. I was like, well, I'll just go to Texas and be with my family. So I spent my whole senior year while my parents lived in Texas, just me and then two other dudes living in a house.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome. That's
rocked it. Almost didn't graduate, but rocked it.
So were you 18?
I was 17. I didn't turn 18 until that summer.
So that was basically a year of college.
Basically.
In a way.
Yeah. By the time
Lifestyle-wise.
Yeah. Well, by the time I got into college and went there, I was like, I can handle part. I've already partied. Like, I already had this down. So, I just forwent that.
Right.
And then I went to Texas and went to college for like one semester.
You did go to Texas.
Yeah.
Then. Okay.
And then my dad was a Marine. And I think at that time, there was some shit going on and somewhere over, like, Panama.
Yeah.
Like they went over and got Noriega, and I was watching that, and I was like,
"So you were motivated?
Yeah, I should go do that before I do anything."
Was it like American Sniper? I mean, did you feel like patriotic and motivated, and you wanted to go over there and make?
Yeah, I was like at the time pissed that I didn't get to go to the war, even though the war only lasted 3 days.
Right,
sure. Not much shit happened, but I was pissed. Now I'm like, thank God I didn't go. You know?
Oh, wait a minute! I'm getting my wars mixed up. This isn't the elder George Bush's. This is.
Yes, this is 90.
This was the older,
90?
Yeah.
1991? What was it?
This was the oldest.
Yeah.
This was the first time.
Big George's War, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to forget.
Yeah, the Gulf War, in all reality, lasted 3 days.
Yeah.
Yes?
It did, yes.
Okay. So that wasn't mission accomplished. That was the next.
Right. So did you go through training or hell, what do they call that?
Hell week?
Boot camp.
Went to boot
camp. 6-8 weeks of that?
I think it was 12 weeks.
Oh my
God.
Well, and I know that you and I have talked about this, Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
The first hour of that movie is practically dead on.
Spot on.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which Ernie was a real drill instructor.
Right. Yeah. The guy who plays the drill instructor in Full Metal Jacket was an actual drill instructor.
Yeah, so he's spot on. Yeah,
so did that change who you became those 12 weeks?
For sure. Like, I was the biggest fuck off like in school.
See,
man.
I only know this, Todd. Yeah. Like I've known you for
I know, that's what we're digging here,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, yeah. Like four, well, I've known you for 5 years, 4 or 5 years, uh-huh. right?
Oh, yeah. Longer than that, I think.
Yeah. Pretty well. Yeah. And I can remember thinking to myself, there are very few people I like on sight. I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot of people that I think, oh, God, I'm not going to like this guy. I mean, that almost happens daily. But I don't know what it is about you. And I get this from people who meet you for the first time. It's like, oh, yeah, he's a great guy. I mean, I've never heard that often about anybody in my life.
I think I just I genuinely love people. I really do.
You told me that you take it personally if someone doesn't like you.
Yeah,
I mean, it really totally. Hurts your feelings.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. And I guess I didn't have a brother, so I just like that camaraderie with that. Like I'm really close to my friends.
Yep,
like,
same here.
I just love it, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, I was a big fuck off. And I literally made a conscious decision, like, I need to get some discipline in my life or I'm going to have problems. You know.
So this was when you were 18, 19 years old, right?
Yeah. I could just tell. I was like, I'll never get anything accomplished if I don't fucking learn how to, you know, wake up in the morning and get shit done. Yeah.
Okay. So how long you were in the Marines? 3 years? 2 years?
6 years in the reserves, but a year and a half of that was active duty because I went to boot camp, my infantry training, military police training, and then we got activated for about a year.
Okay.
So I worked on a base for like.
Could a guy like Jeff make it through boot camp?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
A guy like Jeff.
Fuck yeah.
I think you could. For one, you can run your ass off. That's a big start.
Running is half the battle, right?
Yeah.
See, here's the thing about little Jeffy. He's kind of ripped and shredded. He wears all these big oversized shirts.
Right.
But he lifts a lot and he's.
Physically, yes.
Yeah. No, No, but actually, mentally. I think mentally he could. He could scare some people to fucking death if he wanted.
Now, here's the problem you would have.
I've never seen him yelled at.
Cross country.
That might be the problem, though. How old are you right now?
26 and a half.
And three quarters.
Now you've developed a brain and a personality. That's when it's trouble. That's when boot camp's hard.
Oh, like, I will get rid of
that. Physically, you would have it, but I think you'd be like, oh, why would I do that? That's fucking stupid. That's how, by the time I was 26, that's how my brain worked. When you're 18, you're just like, yes, sir, no, sir, you know.
Sure. You know, I remember where I was when I heard that, and I wasn't aware of that. Like, your brain doesn't end up forming until you're 25 or some crazy thing. Is that
right?
It
doesn't fully get done with the selfish part of some things. Yeah. That's why teenagers are all – their
insane.
Stuff is so backwards.
Yeah. If I'd have known that when I was – I mean, you guys know that I had – well, especially Jason knows that I was off the chart selfish when I was 40, let alone – I can't imagine – I mean, you know?
Yeah, that's teenagers.
Would you have liked to have done military stuff?
Oh, I'd love to do.
Really?
Yeah, like a – what was it?
Was that
American Sniper, like the training they do? I'd love to do something like that and see how long I could go.
You physically could probably do the Special Forces.
I think I could. I think I could.
I bet you could.
I can swim. Like I can do everything.
I bet you could. If they tested you out, I bet you could be a sniper. There's no doubt about it.
I'm still Team 6 material. Okay.
There's
so
no doubt about it.
I told the co-host on my podcast, JeffreyBird.com, I told Caitlin that I was thinking about getting a half-sleeve tattoo.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she laughed in my face. And she's like, you're not a tattoo guy. Am I not a tattoo guy?
No. You've been thinking about getting a tattoo for a year.
You have precious, sweet skin.
I don't see you with a bunch of tattoos.
If Todd says I can't pull off tattoos, I can't pull off tattoos.
No, I'm going to tell you, you can pull off a tattoo because you went with me the last time I got my most recent tattoo, and that's how it starts.
I think a tattoo he could pull off.
Yeah, yeah.
Sleeves, I don't know. Maybe a tramp stamp, like a little butterfly.
Oh, yeah, right above your ass crack.
You can pull that off.
I want to do like a longhorn above my ass crack.
There you go.
Yeah, in honor of Todd going to UT.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right.
Yeah, one of my friends, he was going to be a shortstop there. It's a long story. but no, I think I could pull it off.
I don't know about a sleeve.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I got my seventh tattoo, this headdress, and it's by far the most elaborate one I've got. And I kept staring at this one, which was my favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember me saying this. I wish it was at this stage instead of him just.
Yeah.
Just, oh, God.
Well, tats work on you, chick, because you have a very blue collar, like, look. I mean, you look like a guy that's a mate. They all like a.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Like, something to do with the darker skin.
The
too.
Olive skin. Yeah. Yeah. You have no idea that there's this incredible brain underneath this hard working class exterior, this white trash exterior. interior.
Yeah, like if you were to tell me if we'd met for the first time, and you I'm like, what do you do? And you were like, I build motorcycles. I'd be like, oh yeah,
yeah,
totally. You know what I mean?
Totally.
That's why you. Yeah, Jeff's got more of an IT feel.
Okay, that's true. That's
yeah.
Awesome.
So, yeah. I don't mean that in a negative.
You mean it in a good way? Yeah. No, yeah. I want to be a riddle wrapped in an enigma. I want.
That's right.
Okay. I want a girl to be in my bed, and I take my shirt off, and she goes, "You have a full sleeve? What? I didn't.
Holy shit! I didn't see that coming.
What would your? Here's the most difficult thing about getting a tattoo: choosing what tattoo to get.
Oh yeah,
right.
But you're going to think Patriots, right?
No. Ryan Gosling once said, "Never get a tattoo that has meaning because you won't have those same feelings in 10 years." And Ryan Gosling doesn't lie, so
everybody knows that.
Yeah.
You know what? What does Ryan do? Oh, he's an actor.
Yeah.
Okay. But my point is,
I just want to get a design. I'm gonna get some flowers and some waves.
Yeah.
I heard flowers. I heard waves.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like some like manly flowers.
A lot of color,
you know,
in
I mean?
It. Yeah. A lot of color.
I want to do some color.
Okay.
Well, that's the thing about – I would like – I'm going to – and there's something about getting a tattoo and then you get another one. And you don't have any
– I have two, but mine is so stupid. Mine just –
What are
yours?
Did
you get a Marine Corps?
Like I have one, the USMC. I don't regret that one. Just the letters.
Sure. Yeah.
But then these two stupid like tribal armband things that just make no sense. And I'm like
– I don't mind those.
What year did you get it?
Oh, gosh.
Between 1992 and –
Yeah, early 2000s
maybe. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Nick Lachey made that hot from 98 Degrees. Like, cool, not hot. Like, that's hot. Okay.
I mean, I've got a tattoo guy on. Here's how. I've got a tattoo guy that lives in Austin, used to live here, Donnie Kazee. He's great. I'm on his speed dial. That he's under strict orders. If he comes to – he visits town. A buddy of his has a tattoo. Well, you met.
Yeah,
you met,
Jacob.
And when he comes to town to work at Jacob's, he calls me and goes, you need anything? And so the next time Donnie comes to town.
If Donnie will do it, I'm in.
He's gonna
tell you. We need to have him at least in here and talk him through it.
That's a great idea.
Do you have an idea of what you want? Just
like
those shapes?
Waves and flowers?
Waves and flowers.
I got a picture of one that's already been done. And then I designed my own tattoo that just goes back down my tricep. Jason, don't put your palm in your hand. facing your palm.
Now, you're not going to be able – it's not just like when I got my – I mean, this is pretty – this one's by far the most elaborate one I have. And it took like 3 hours. But if you're talking a sleeve, I mean, that's a couple visits. Yeah. You know that, right? Chick,
my whole life is pain. I'm ready for it.
So speaking of pain, I'm fascinated about the boot camp.
Yes, yes. So you go to boot camp.
I know I couldn't get through boot camp. So
you could.
So 12 weeks, what is it? Is this them yelling at you running? I mean, what else is there?
Yeah, it's a total
mental breakdown. They just bring you down?
Break you down mentally, physically, and to the point that you just are a zombie basically, and you really feel that way. And then they start building you back up and making you feel good about yourself, and you're getting in shape.
Okay.
And then you're a Marine because you're just in love with everything about being a Marine. So when they tell you
you
jump,
are the
you
member
jump.
Of a brotherhood.
So it worked. So
yeah. Oh, there's a point there where you're just like, this is going to be my life forever.
Well, there
this
is.
Sucks.
Truly, there is a – and I obviously am not a Marine, but I understand the – unspoken camaraderie there is. If you meet a guy who's a Marine, I mean, it's a fraternity.
There's a bond there. It's totally a fraternity.
You guys automatically have something in common, and you're going to be able to talk for a couple hours in a bar in Beaufort, South Carolina.
Yeah. So I would say like the first month is pretty much just you can't do anything right. You get screamed at constantly every time you move. It's just you're just like you have nothing left. But you're really like you hit bottom, and you're just like, all right, man, I'm just going to breathe, and I'll turn my head when he tells me to turn my head. I'm not going to think of my own because when I do, I get in trouble. So and then they just build you back up.
How do they build you back up? Is it like pudding cups? Like they do a system of rewards?
And that would build me back up.
It is, though. Yeah. There's just subtle rewards.
Bananas and pudding cups.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
And then, you start to get feeling about
like
feeling
chocolate.
Good about yourself. You know?
What is it?
Dark chocolate.
Dark
pudding.
Chocolate.
Yes,
pudding.
Another snack pack. Ooh, sorry, Todd. Snack pack.
My
snack pack.
Dark chocolate and yogurt.
I like butterscotch. Mm. I'm odd. Yeah. My favorite Marine story is Greg Hunt. And I'm going to tell you this. Don't you feel like there are a lot of comedians that are Marines?
I know Hunt is.
Connolly.
James Connolly.
James Pat. Yeah.
Mitch.
Burrow,
yes.
Oh
my God, that's right.
There's quite a few.
Yeah, there's So and that's, there's still a couple more.
So Han tells me about this, and I would that he got tired of me asking. Tell me more Marine stories. So he was on. I got Firewatch late night watch,
yeah,
whatever
Firewatch,
that is.
I call
so
it.
He's on Firewatch like 2:33 in the morning, and there's some other guys hanging around. So he starts fucking around, like he takes his cover, his hat to you civilians. Uh-huh. And he like tips it over to one side or something. He's marching goofy through the barracks. So he's waking other guys up and marching goofy. And he said, it's like 3 a.m. He opens a door and there standing in front of him is the drill instructor.
Oh, shit.
And the drill instructor is like it's 10 a.m. He's dressed perfectly. He just looked and he's just staring at Han. And Han, okay, I'm in trouble. I'm in big. It was just amazing to me that the drill instructor would have it together that he had to get up and get dressed so he could catch Greg.
Yeah.
And but you
they
know,
never let you catch them not
no.
put their shit together.
No,
yeah.
Sure. The drill instructors are all or drill sergeants or whatever. Yeah, they are always.
We had a guy
fascinating life.
So much funny stuff. It's really funny though. Just like that's why people like the first part of Full Metal Jacket. It's hilarious, right? Mm. Them screaming. The
choke yourself.
Yeah.
Don't use mine. Choke yourself.
We had this guy named Preston had narcolepsy. He would just fall asleep at will.
No.
You know, I don't know how he made it through. I should have kicked him out, but he would just fall asleep all the time. So anytime you when you had downtime. You would just sit behind your little footlocker with you break your rifle apart and you just clean your rifle and you would study your little book of knowledge, they called it. And that was your downtime, right? So every time that would happen, Preston would fall asleep. He would just slump his head down. And he was out with his boar brush in his hand and part of his rifle. So
the boar brush. Okay.
Yeah. Now, when a drill instructor, if he was in his office, he to call for you, if he wanted me, he would say, "Recruit McComas," and he'd scream it from his office, and then all the other recruits have to go chime in and go, "Recruit McComas, aye, sir." And then I would run up and knock 3 times on the duty hatch and say, "Recruit McComas, reporting as ordered, sir." Right?
So it's a whole unit thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and if anybody fucked that up, there was a problem. There was a penalty.
Right. Oh, so Preston went. He fell asleep doing that, and I just got the rest of the recruits going. I was like, "Recruit Preston, aye, aye, sir." And he wakes up. He's like, "Oh, shit." So he runs up real fast and he knocks on the duty hatch. He waits. Well, the drill instructor wasn't there. So he stood there for like 25 minutes waiting, thinking the drill instructor was fucking with me.
Oh, my God.
And the drill instructor came in. And he got thrashed bad.
That's awesome.
So, like in Full Metal Jacket, did they decide what you were, like infantry or journalism or rifleman or whatever they would call that?
Yeah, and I was reservist. So my job was already selected. So when you're a reservist, you have to have your job before you go.
Oh, okay.
But the active duty guys, a lot of them did not. And the recruiters would lie to them. They'd tell them, you're going to be security forces or whatever they really wanted.
Or something more glamorous.
Yeah.
Than, okay.
So when they pointed out their jobs, they were like, sir, my recruiter said I was going to, and he's like, "He lied. You're a cook." These people were devastating.
God.
Now the 4 years of they're a cook.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I felt so bad, but I'm like, look.
That's okay, crazy. So you're done with Marines, or can they call you up now if they need you? Or
How did it end?
There's a 2-year period when you end your reserve contract where they can call you back if they want. But that's over.
How did yours end, I guess? Is that where you're getting that, Chick? How did the Marines' time end?
So what were you doing during that 2 years?
I got on state police right as my 6-year reserve enlistment was ending.
All right.
I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to stay in.
Is that common for someone from armed services to go into police department?
Yeah, a lot of law enforcement officers were prior military.
Okay, and you were a military policeman in the Marines, too.
So it just made sense. I never even thought about being a cop until I went to the Marine Corps, really. Mm.
So did you – for the state police, you had to go to another boot camp, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To go to their thing. It's much easier. But it's longer. It's like 6 months.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, when you live there all through the week and you go home on the weekend.
So it's just like police academy.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty much, yeah. Running around in your sweatsuit the whole time. Yeah.
So do you putting the Marines – boot camp and the state cop boot camp together, do you still have lifelong friends from those boot camps, if you will? You know what I'm saying?
There's guys I was in the Marine Corps with that I still communicate on Facebook with on a regular basis. That we were real tight. My
you get pretty close to those guys.
Yeah, my rack mate, Larry Hufford. So I was top bunk. He was bottom bunk in boot camp.
Rack mate.
Then we went to combat training together, and we
holy shit,
racks were right next to each other in the same Quonset hut. And then we went to MP school together, and we were roommates at MP school.
Wow.
Now he was active duty, so he went to the fleet right away, and then. But yeah, so we have a we're still friends today. Cool. He's a cop in Illinois.
Cool.
So
no shit.
Yeah.
Oh man. That's great.
Champaign, Urbana area?
I think Rockford. One of the three, Rockford. The Tri-Cities, right? Is it Rockford and
Peoria?
No. That's over towards Iowa, isn't it? Quad Cities?
Maybe. I think it's Rockford, though. Rock Island or something.
Rock Island. Yeah, that's part of it. Yes.
Rock Island, Moline, and the two other ones.
Yeah, yeah, that's west central.
That was way off.
So how long were you – you were at Indiana State Police.
Right.
How long were you a member of the Indiana State Police?
21 years, 105 days.
I think and you just retired officially?
Last Wednesday.
Last Wednesday. And during this whole time, when did you – so you get out of the Marines, you become a member of the Indiana State Police. Then was it the classic, oh, you're funny, man. You should get on stage. You're a real comedian. You're a real comedian. You're
I only did it initially because I was dating a girl who was a cancer survivor, and she had this bucket list thing. Even though she was in remission, she's like, I'm going to finish the bucket list. And her cancer thing was before I had even met her. But so she was always going to the Grand Canyon and hiking the Grand Canyon one weekend and all this stuff. And so she guilted me into making a bucket list. And that was the first thing on there was stand-up comedy. Huh. So then, you know, then she made me go through with it. I was like, I'm going to puss out and shit all over your – you had cancer and you survived. I'm not going to shit all over your bucket list thing. So I guess I could go do it. So I did it and just fell in love from that first time, you know, catch that bug.
Right.
Yeah. Did you? Where did you perform your first time?
Crackers.
Crackers Comedy Club.
Yeah. Oh, downtown? Or?
I had my 3 minutes. Broad Ripple.
No kidding.
Do you remember what your set was your first time on?
Yeah, yeah. I had a bit about Lazy Eye. I don't know if you've ever heard me tell that joke. But
it's based
on Bailey's mom, my son's mom. And then there was a joke I had about how I thought we should use midgets to wean child molesters off of children.
Okay.
Horrible. Heavy stuff on the first set.
And then,
you had balls.
Oh, my God, Todd.
He's a thinker. Yeah. He's a thinker.
I had one other one, I think, at the time about pixie sticks when I was a kid. Yeah, pixie sticks.
Do you remember?
Heavy stuff.
I think, didn't we meet the first time at some hotel upstairs? Remember this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was a Mike Gardner gig.
Mike Gardner gig, and me, you, and Bob Zaney?
Yep. Cause I hosted for you guys.
Yes, and I'm driving to the gig. And Bob and I are in the car, and I go, I'm supposed to host. And he goes, no, they've got this they've got this guy hosting. I go, oh, God, who is it? He goes, I don't know. I guess he's a state policeman, so don't cause any trouble. You know? In my brain, I go, oh, fuck, a state policeman?
He's going to be a comedy?
Stan, what the hell is this shit? And you went up on stage, and it's that thing. You went up on stage, and I immediately fucking liked you, and I had no idea why. No,
I don't know.
Yeah, he were in a beauty pageant, he'd get Mr. Congeniality.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. When I first started comedy, I saw McComas around every once in a while, but he never was like at the open mics I was at. Right. But he was just like the cool uncle. I was like, I don't know who that guy is, but he's really cool. Like,
I like that role.
Same way. I'd heard about him through Chick and others. And finally, it was like, yeah, we're brothers. Because he and I are barely 2 years apart.
And again,
I never had an older brother or a younger brother for that matter.
Right.
Well, he fits that role.
Did Shelbyville and Bedford play each other?
No. Shelbyville and Bedford never met in anything, I don't think.
They're too far apart.
Size-wise, too. Shelbyville's not that big, is it?
No, it's not very big, really. I think the school is 2A.
Okay, yeah. So we're 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Bedford was.
Yeah.
And Damon Bailey's not there.
Well, it's there's one other high school in the county.
Which is what? Yeah. Green County?
Mitchell.
Mitchell.
Yeah.
That's right.
Huh. Probably been down there a few times.
Yeah, love meth some down boys. That way.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it.
Oh, yeah, so listen to this, everybody. Todd, how long were you undercover? Like, that was your career, right?
Probably 7 or 8 years.
Jesus.
Now, I was in the around the unit for longer, but actual undercover, like 7 or 8 years.
So before we get to any questions, is there a similar to the military of top secret, you can't ever talk about it till it's unclassified?
I was never in the cop world?
Or you can't use
Yeah, names. There was – because I did a lot with wiretaps, and the wiretaps are always a big confidential thing.
Okay.
You got an active wire.
Yeah.
An active tap.
Oh, no. Can't talk about it. Can't talk about it.
Wait a minute. You're going to lose your mind. I turned Vibbert onto the wire, and he loves it. Tell him – tell Vibbert what you did, Todd, with the wire guys.
I went, hung out with those guys, rode with them for a week.
Yeah.
He went to Baltimore and actually worked with some of the cops that the wire was based on.
When you are hitting on a girl, is that the thing you go to? Like, hey, I trained the wire.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you've seen the wire.
That's what Jeff would do.
She's like, no, I'm only 23. But
I mean, I guess you have a badge and a gun. That works just as well. So,
Some ladies don't like it. I never bring it up to people.
Is there something you call girls that go after guys in a
holster sniffers? It's my favorite.
I thought
one.
It was like badge bunnies or something.
There's
like
badge
that.
Bunnies and there's
no, I've never heard of that.
There's a bunch of them, but holster That's sniffers true. My favorite.
That's my favorite. Yes.
So did you did before we get back to undercover? Did you do like traffic stops and speeding and things like that
for like a year?
Was that is that like the worst job of being a cop?
I didn't like it. Some guys like it. And they do it. Or girls, they do it their whole career. But
getting back to you being the nicest guy ever, I can't see you actually writing a ticket to somebody.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it at all. Plus, it's not very challenging. I mean, like, you just hold a radar thing up, and it tells you how fast, and you get behind and pull them over, and you're like, hey, that thing said you were going this fast. Here's your ticket. You know what I mean? There's no
– Is it the fun in it, though, finding a little spot where you can kind of see them, get them coming up over the hill or something? You know, there's times when you're driving, and you turn a corner, and there they
know.
Are.
I went down to Bloomington yesterday with Pardo, and I don't know how I wasn't – stopped for speeding twice. He was in my – I was on 465, the giant interstate, and his car was off to the side of the road, but there's not much of a shoulder toward the middle of the road.
Right.
So he's there in the middle, and his car's kind of angled. Mm. His door's open, and I guess he's pointing radar –
Sure.
To oncoming traffic, not in my direction.
And that's the laser. When now, if they're pointed, it's the laser gun.
Super
accurate, I guess.
But I was going 72 and a 55 or whatever. I mean, I wasn't speeding, but I was, speed. I mean, I heard 9, you're fine, 10, you're mine, or something like that.
Yeah,
is that true or no?
We used to, when I was doing it, you'd get a warning up to 10 mile an hour over, and I think from 10 to 15. 10 to 14 miles an hour over, you got a warning.
Right.
15 miles per hour over or more, you got a ticket. That was kind of the general rule. But I just didn't buy into, like, I don't care if people speed. What the fuck? I don't really care.
They got their car under control. And
now those guys are like, we reduce crashes. I'm like, I doubt this is reduced.
Yeah, the reckless drivers that are bobbing in and out, those are the ones I want you to get.
Yeah.
Cops are going 90 miles an hour.
Right. And now you got to drive 130 to catch the guy. How safe is that for anybody? Yeah.
Fastest you gone on a car?
133 that I know of because the speedometer stopped at 133.
Oh my God.
But don't they teach you like aggressive or whatever they call it, aggressive driving or stunt driving or whatever
they call it?
We call
it emergency vehicle operation. I think EVO it's called.
Sure,
so,
okay. Nice.
One time I was hauling, it was, I think, Batesville, Indiana. There's State Road 46 parallels the interstate.
Capital of the world, Batesville, yeah.
I was hauling ass to a call, and I was going 133, and I was a Caprice Classic then, and that's what the speedometer would stop at. So it was a 133, and I'm just hauling balls around this call, and this cat, I could see it running out in front of me.
No.
And I'm like, I can't swerve, I'll die, I'll put this thing, and it just whack. I hit this cat at 133, square on the grill. It just hurt my soul. You know what I mean? I was just like,
You probably vaporized it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh my God.
There was no. Yeah. Oh.
Who was the pitcher that threw that pitch and hit the
Randy Johnson?
Randy Johnson.
Oh, the seagull.
In spring training, there's grainy video of it, but it just dust.
He nailed that bird.
Yeah.
So what was your most common undercover assignment? You were buying and selling drugs?
Meth was really big. And so we were either busting meth labs or buying meth. I mean, that was the most popular. I bought some heroin and crack a little bit, but it was usually meth was the big thing.
And do you have any of that heroin? I'm kidding. Of course
I'm
not
kidding. Do you do the little, pinky and – and put
like
it
on TV.
Were you trained to realize it wasn't, you know?
And what does actual cocaine or heroin taste? You what?
I said no. I've gotten burnt before.
Oh, you bought
fake dope? Yeah,
like baking powder.
Yeah, I've spent like $10,000 of ATF money on baking soda before.
Wow! But you got the guy right.
Yeah, yeah.
Eventually, yeah.
You have one of those windbreakers that has ATF on the back of it?
I do. Well, it's a. Hoodie? North Face, actually.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Fancy.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe we should take some of that money and fix the
I shouldn't have said that. So they're going to ask for it back now that I'm gone. But
so you just buy fake drugs, and then when the money changed hands, you go, all right, you're under arrest or shit like that?
No, we usually let it go. Like I might buy off a guy three times. Or, you know, if I could keep working myself up to bigger amounts and to other people, I keep it going. And then we'd usually just let it – I would just, like, disappear. The guy wouldn't see me anymore. And then, like, 6 months later, we'd file for a warrant. That way he has more time to, like, well, I can't remember who all I was dealing to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
He kind of forgets about me. So that's a point to me quickly because an informant it was used to introduce me. So you basically – if you arrest them too fast, they're like, oh, I know who the snitch is.
Got it. Yeah, right. Sure, right.
They're going to find out eventually anyway, but –
Oh, let's take a break. God. We'll come back with more stories.
Oh, okay. Cool? Yeah. This is our guest, comedian, Marine.
Badass,
state trooper.
Retiree.
Old man.
Todd McComas is our guest this week on The Chick McGee Show on Podcast One. Okay, now who was that? Them or me?
Oh, yeah!
Can't tell it apart.
I know you planned it.
So, were you into the Beastie Boys?
Just a couple of songs. I was not. I never owned anything. I owned a CD single of this.
Yeah. A CD
this, that
yes.
song?
Yes. Single is what
yes.
he said.
I'm not kidding you. This I got it probably in like 93 or 4, whatever year this came out.
And how much was a CD single?
Oh, heck, I don't know.
$3.99?
Yeah, probably $5, yeah.
They were really big probably my junior year of high school.
Okay.
So that's what, 87?
Yeah, that's probably Fight for Your Right.
Yeah.
To party.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
No Sleep Till.
Yeah.
I mean, come on here. I'll play that.
No
one.
Sleep Till Brooklyn? What?
Come on, that riff.
Yeah. This just made you feel good.
But they didn't. Did they play their instruments?
I think so, yeah.
I thought they had a band they sang with.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't know anything about the Beastie Boys.
Nope, couldn't play them a lick. Start that rumor. Get people real
I think
upset.
Part of it, they just seem like kids you might have known, and they had a band, and they made it big. You
yeah.
know, they seem kind of somewhat relatable.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
They seem upset about something.
Yeah, they're a little aggressive.
Hi, we're welcome back to the Chick McGee Show. That's Jason. That's Jeff. Our guest today is Marine, former Indiana State Trooper, and standing-up comedian Todd McComas is here. And by all accounts, one of the nicest guys to ever hang out
so.
With. Yeah. You're just
That's what
else.
I strive for. Sometimes I get drunk, and I guess I'm not so nice, I'm told. By certain people. I've gone off on Bowers a couple of times. So there must be a little demon that lives down there. It's like, I'm tired of being nice all the time.
Well,
you know,
now, wait a minute. If you went off on Bowers, no, Bowers is a good guy, too.
Yeah,
I
know.
Really. I mean,
I know.
What's the longest you can spend time with Bowers, though? Because after a while, there's sort of this process.
No, Bowers is, let me jump in.
And I love Bowers.
Bowers is a great guy, but he's. I think he almost has as much – correct me if I'm wrong. I think he almost has as much fun seeing other people have fun as if he has fun. I think that's how he has fun.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
he's tried to talk me into a couple things several occasions, and I haven't done them yet. But, I mean, I think that nothing would make him happier than if we hung out and I had one of the best nights of my life, and he would be very excited.
The prettiest girls I've – ever slept with happened because of Bowers. He just enjoys hooking his friends up.
Okay.
But I can spend a long time around it because we're so used to each other now the things that might irritate people about Bowers, I'm just numb. I didn't, you know.
Well, he has a lot of theories, yes. And I sometimes after about the third or fourth one, you're like, all right.
Sometimes he's doing it just to get a reaction.
That's what I'm wondering.
And
yes.
I'm like, well,
yes.
Sometimes that wears people down, man.
Well, yeah. And don't get him talking about cancer.
Yeah, and you right. guys, you got you and Bowers, and I don't know, a couple other guys. You all have decided, and you. To quite a while ago to go into business together.
Right.
You guys started, you guys are together on Morty's.
Yes.
Comedy club here in Indianapolis. And then you also, Wiley's in Dayton.
Yes.
And is that it? Or
yeah, because we just, so we had one in Louisville, the Laughing Derby.
Right.
But we sold it.
The Laughing Derby is not that funny anymore. Right.
Right? It's not. That club was wearing us down.
Yeah.
But we still have Wiley's, and Wiley's, like, I consider Morty's probably an A room, you know, mm-hmm. where Wiley's is being ran kind of like a B room, C room, where it's a place where good features can try headlining.
Cut their teeth about
right. Now, we do have some headliners, too, that do it because they're our friends and they live close and they don't mind, you know, that right. it's a lesser deal. But, yeah. But that club's – what I hate about – Wiley's is like – I just love the feel of that room.
Wiley's,
there are very few rooms I've
you're
played.
Exactly right. Wiley's feels, awesome. Feels great. It's in a great part of Dayton. It's mm-hmm. in that bohemian kind of Oregon district. I don't – because I went over there when Rob Haney owned right. it, and I'd go over there quite often and always have a great time.
Yeah.
But then I think as kind of sadly, kind of as a reflection on not so much Wiley's, but – Dayton as a city.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's not doing well.
I think it's starting to come back a little bit, but it really was because I worked there for like 2 years back in the late 80s, and it was really humming. But when NCR left, National Cash Register, and I mean, that's what everyone points to.
Right.
And
you worked in Dayton in radio.
I worked in Dayton
not
radio.
At the Wiley's.
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. I didn't ever work at Wiley's until I moved to Indianapolis, and then I do. I try to do once a year over there with you know, some funny guys, and we had some great time. I can't imagine. I mean, next to asking a friend for money or going into business with a friend. I mean, that you guys must. How long have you known Bowers? And how is
I've known Bowers ever since I started comedy? So like 7 years almost.
So yeah. he was in charge of Morty's when you
yes
okay
he so had you, just purchased Morty's okay. he and Tony when I started comedy so
Tony that's it yeah. Tony Day what is his
Tony
name
Tony Dierdorf.
Dierdorf. That yeah. I don't know why I said
love
Day.
Love that guy
Dierdorf.
But we're all pretty tight so
he's
man,
a great guy Tony's a great guy
we,
I don't
we
see
have
him
some screaming matches we you know because you're such good friends but I like that I like to be you know that we can yell at each other and everything's fine afterward you know because you're not going to agree on everything.
Well, that's
sure.
what we kind of where I work here and at the radio station. I was telling I forget who it was, but I was telling when I moved to San Diego, my little idiosyncrasies, mm-hmm. and because I, you know, Tom and I and all that whole crew, we've worked together for 30 years.
Yeah,
and, you know, there's you
that
know,
was such a big deal when you left,
you bastard.
I'll never forget it. I remember when it happened. Mm-hmm. Like everybody, all my friends, everybody was like, God damn it. Why did he leave? You know?
Well, and to Tom's credit, I mean, Tom is the only reason that I'm back here is because he thought enough ahead mm-hmm. to have me call in at least once a week and the West Coast correspondent and stuff like that. So yeah. I would stay. And, you know, sure enough, I came back and I sort of had my tail between my legs, but not entirely.
Right.
But, no, yeah. My point is, I mean, people who – it's like anything in life, it's good and bad when you work with someone for a very long time
mm-hmm.
in that you end up forgiving a lot and you end up understanding a lot and you realize that I hate you, you son of a bitch. One day it's like,
right.
I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But, and then people who are smarter than me realize that, you know, that's – You yeah. know what people do, and I mean
for
that's
sure.
that's how families work.
And yeah, and Bowers and I are so close. We're like brothers in that. I'm just, you know, I'll be like, you're being a fucking idiot right now. What you're saying is so stupid. It doesn't, you know, and I really feel that way, but I'll say it. And then afterward, we're like, all right, well, let's just go get a beer or something. And,
you know. And there'll be a little bit of, yeah, I was an idiot. And you're like, no, you weren't that big of an idiot.
Yeah, yeah. We always come at the end, but by the end, we're okay.
Compromise, man.
Yeah. But I'm not afraid to say anything, and he doesn't care, and he's not afraid to say anything to me, and, you know. So
was it his idea for you to start in comedy, or how did that? So you were in the Marines, you were a state trooper, and then you thought, I'm going to be a comedian.
Well, remember that, the girlfriend thing?
Yeah, the girlfriend.
Oh, the girlfriend and the cancer, the bucket list. Yeah. Okay, so you went on stage, and immediately it was.
I just loved it. I mean, I got laughs that first time, and which you always do because you bring your friends, you know. And the second time, it was like not as good, and third time sucked. Like they always say, the third time's your worst time. And then, but I still, then it was, I get really, if I enjoy something, I get so wrapped up in trying to be the best at it, it's almost sickening how hard I'll work. Like, I did jiu-jitsu for a while. I could not stand to get beat. So when I get beat, I would just go crazy. Like, oh, I've got to train harder and go to some seminars and get better. And that's how I always treated comedy. And then, so I met Bowers at just a shitty open mic in Wanamaker, Indiana, at some bar called the Gold Mine.
Oh, yeah, I've been there. Yeah.
He saw me and he was like, hey, you're pretty funny. Why don't you, I think you end up being good at this once you come over to Morty's. And I did. I loved Crackers. Crackers at that time, they wouldn't talk to you if you were new. You know, this thing.
Well, everybody's new at one point.
Yeah. Brent Terhune, thank God, at least at one point, he was like, hey, you should go start doing the open mic somewhere else. Like, we have these bar shows, and you should get, you know, check out this Facebook page, and it tells you where they are. You know, so he helped me, but I was just, I wanted to learn more. I was like, man, I'm going to be able to pick people's brains, and it's not happening here. So yeah, I'll go try your place.
Well, you know, I am saying it because you're both sitting here, but I mean, I'm not just saying it. You both, when I first saw you, and I'm not saying that I'm, you know, a star maker, or I can spot somebody, but you both are, even though I'm sure you're nervous at times, but both, when I saw both of you the first time, there's just...
Vibbert's the other one you're talking about.
That's not me.
No. I don't agree with that, but no. I'm just... No, Vibbert, I'm a... When I first saw Vibbert, I was and very, also
yeah,
a fan.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
The first time I ever hosted a show, like a real show, Chick was sitting in the back, and I was working with Chick for like 4 months, and I'm about to go up on stage. I see Chick, and I'm like, ah, great. So I did like a 13-minute set in like 9 minutes, eight and a half, and I just like, ah, it was awful.
Oh,
so
really?
I was just talking as fast as I could, and I wouldn't stop talking, and I didn't take any breaths. All right, thank you, everybody. Bye. Nailed it.
Yeah, Vibbert's always said, and I think I saw you pretty early on. Are you trying? Oh, you just always like, oh, he's comfortable, and he's, you know, likable. That's... And a good writer.
Yeah, like that's all it takes. Like, you know? I would know, but people ask me all the time, you know, I'm thinking about being a stand up. And I go, man, the comfortableness part is, to me, it's not 90%, but obviously you have to have, you know, material, but man, that ease and that, because think of the stuff that Jerry says, Seinfeld says on stage.
Right.
And yeah, it's funny, but he's so fucking comfortable.
Yes.
You know, it's just like he's standing, but it seems like he's sitting in a recliner.
Right.
Look, what's the deal with socks? Huh? I mean, I know, and it's just so easy.
Like, a lot of his bits wouldn't work as well, but it's the way he sells it. I mean, he is 100% committed. Yeah, if he didn't keep that, the joke falls flat.
Look, The Chinese have seen the fork and they say, no, we're going to stay with chopsticks. That's what I like about the Chinese. I don't know. So what do you do now? You're out of a job, right? You retired? You're going to hit comedy pretty hard.
I'm going to hit comedy a little harder, help get more involved with the club stuff. And then, you know, I got a job that's going to start in about a week. It starts this week. I can't announce it yet. Yeah. When does this get released?
Today.
Okay, yeah. I can't announce it until...
Same day delivery for the Chick McGee show.
That's awesome.
That's right, yeah.
But, so next week I'll be able to announce it after somebody else announces something. And it's a good job. It'd be cool. It's pretty much a dream job.
Chick will retweet it for you once it happens.
Oh, absolutely.
So our listeners will.
Do that. I mean,
check back in a week.
Text me or whatever if you need anything tweeted or anything like that.
So you're, you know, much like Chick in his 6 months in San Diego, you're not going back to being a cop.
I can't. Yeah.
You can't? It can't happen.
Yep. Once legally, I signed it. Done.
You okay. signed your paper, huh?
Yeah. Can you
be?
To.
Can you be a cop somewhere else?
IMPD or?
Yeah, I can because I think I can. I have 2 years where I can go get hired by somebody else and not have to go back to the academy.
Okay.
I think it's 2 or 3 year period of time there. I mean, I won't do that, but.
So what's the, oh God, there's so many reasons I'm not a policeman. But I mean, that I think, I mean, Marines obviously cool and all, but I can't, the patience, the perspective, the maturity.
The risk taking.
The risk taking. The calmness. You couldn't be a police. I mean.
The paperwork.
The paperwork is maddening.
I mean, what? I can't. Imagine that, you know, it's that scene from The Right Stuff when, you know, their husbands are test pilots and they go, I wonder if any of my friends who have businessmen for husbands realize if they go into a meeting, they got a 50-50 chance of coming out alive. You know, right. I mean, but that's always there. I mean, I just can't wrap my head around you were a cop for 21 years.
Sometimes I can't either. I mean, I look back. Like it, and it's changed now to where even pretty much I would say public perception, we don't have. It used to when I first started, people were kind of like, oh, it's a respectable job. And they think of it that way. Now that's lost that. I mean, I think that's why I never bring it up hardly to anyone.
Right.
Because most of the times I think people. You have to prove them that you're not an asshole once
Narc.
You say you're a cop.
Yeah, Narc. Like, Narc. Yeah, what? Know? Yeah, I mean, it is so.
So when you
know.
Take that away on top of this other stuff, it's become a way less attractive career for less and less people every year are putting in for the jobs.
Mm, that's not good.
For sure.
And and the best and the brightest certainly aren't
right.
thinking about it, right? Right, I mean, because right. it's dangerous. It's negative public relations. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
Is the most dangerous part of being a policeman like a domestic call? Is that.
That's what they say. And I think it's the traffic stop. Those guys are stopping cars every day because it's just a complete unknown. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the stuff I did, even when the fugitive thing was where I.
Well, you go and bring somebody back, right?
We're always going after very violent offenders. So, and we're just serving the warrant on them, surprising them. But at least I knew what I was going into. Well, I knew about this guy.
Typical Todd, and I'd be like, okay, we're going to have breakfast tomorrow morning, right? I'm going, yeah, no problem. And so I'd text him, Bob Evans, in a half hour. He goes, nah, I'm in South Bend. I didn't make it back last night.
We'd been out on that.
I'm catching bad guys. I'm like, what? I can't. I don't know. I just
It was a lot of door kicking and dangerous people, but I always knew that's what I'm going after. And we had the element of surprise a lot of times, which is helpful. A guy just stopping a car and walking up to it, he doesn't know if that's – if it's one, you know, just Joe Citizen, stand-up American contributor to society, or if it's a person who has a serious warrant out on them and they're going to shoot you
and
because they don't want you to find that
dope
out.
Or something, you know.
And so that's the, I think that's the scariest job. But
you know, I don't, you know, cops, policemen, there are. You know, you have deadly force in your hands, and you know, sometimes it goes horribly wrong.
Yeah.
But other times, obviously, you're saving lives, and you're – so it's – you know, it's a, next to whose side are you on, Trump or you know, the United – I mean, being a
– Well, here's what really policeman, sucks
it's
now
it's
got to
be tough, man.
They're stirring the media, stirring the pot sure. so much that they're really – And a lot of it's fictional. Like, statistically speaking, you know, white cops aren't shooting black guys at nearly this, the way they make it sound. So now they're pitting a whole section of the population against another. And when the two encounter each other, you know, it gets scary for cops in some situations.
Sure.
And now it's scary for the offender as well. So now the two are extra touchy because they're like, he's thinking, oh, I'm black. He's going to shoot me.
Right.
And then the white guy's thinking, oh, this guy's really pissed at me right now. Black guys don't like us right now. And it just makes it worse. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like in my instance, I worked 21, a year and a half ago when we had our shootout. Like I'd worked 20 years almost and never had to fire my weapon. I had guns pointed at me and I pointed back, but never.
Do you want to tell that story?
Yeah, I'll tell it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. So
this is an amazing, true story. And I got sick when I heard it.
And part of the reason
hug
I
you
left.
Immediately. Right. And yeah, part of the reason you retired.
Yeah, because yeah, I was like, "With my time's up."
Yeah.
So
somebody's telling me something.
Right. So we were out helping the drug unit. I'm on the fugitive task force at that time, and we're helping the drug unit with following around this heroin dealer. The guy is supposed to drop off heroin that day, so we're doing like a surveillance of him, and then also we were going to take him down. At the end of it,
you're going to arrest him and, and cuff him and
watch
take
the
him.
Deal happen, and then we'll swoop in and take him. Okay. So we were going to be used as a takedown team, okay.
This is something you've done a bunch of times.
Yeah, okay. We're in undercover cars, we're buzzing around and just following the guy, and somebody gets made. Like he smelled that there was a surveillance happening, and the car took off real fast, and they found it again. The guy we were watching was not in it.
Okay.
So they're like, shit, now we got to find this guy. He's got a warrant on him too, so we just need to find him. Well, they got a tip that the guy was at this particular address in an apartment complex. And so we go there and set up on it. Well, the number they gave turns out was the wrong building. So I purposely set like two buildings down so when he walked out, he wouldn't walk right into me, right?
Right.
He didn't see me so I could look far away. But turns out he was in the building right in front of me. And then there were some guys lined up in parking spots to my right. But they were pulled in nose in, so they were facing away from the building and watching in their rearview mirror.
Right.
Well, I was facing the building and right in front of the main door. And when the guy walked out, you know, I had put my raid vest on. And I had that to set police on it.
Does that have bulletproof capability?
Yeah, it has a bulletproof panels inside.
Okay.
So I picked up my radio and I was trying to tell everybody, hey, he's walking out. He's like right in front of me. And my radio wouldn't work. It just kept going every time I would key it up. So the guy looks at me, and he sees I'm a cop, even though I'm in a regular car.
Right. And because you have – yeah, it says police on your vest.
Yeah, because I was all ready for the grab, right?
Right.
So and then he looks down, and he sees some police-looking cars to the left. And then he looks between these two buildings, and he starts kind of inching his way like he's going to take off running between the two buildings. I'm trying to call. My radio won't work. So finally, I just threw it on the floor, and I'm like, fuck it. So I get out and I'm like, police, get your hands up, stop. And the guy reaches back and he just real quick. And we're only about 15 to 20 feet apart at this time. And he reaches and he's back real quick and he pulls out a gun and he starts pointing it at me. And I'm like, shit. And there was a car to my left. So as I pull my gun, I get behind that car. So I'm thinking, you know, put something between us.
Right.
So I can see him through the back glass and he starts coming toward the car. And he starts to go around the car, and he's trying to fire. I can see that he's squeezing, but it's not shooting for some reason. So I start to go around the opposite side of the car. So he's kind of like chasing me around the car, trying to shoot over the top.
Sure.
And my brain was like, is this really happening right now?
Oh, my God.
Is he really? Because I used to have a nightmare about a guy – about being chased around a car and shooting at each other. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I always had this nightmare.
My worst nightmare is happening right now.
It's about to happen. I'm like, we're about to shoot out right here. And then I'm just thinking, well, can I shoot him through the window with a bullet make it all the way through both windows? Can I hit him? Through? All these things are going through my mind real fast. And then I'm like, well, does he have to actually start shooting at me? Should I wait till the gun fires before I shoot? You know, because that's good.
But he's made an attempt already.
He's trying to shoot me. It's just not.
So are you hearing a click or anything?
More I can just see the action of it and the barrel dipping every time he squeezes, right?
Okay.
Well, he was holding the gangster style to the side.
Right.
The particular gun he had has a thing on the back of the handle that has to be depressed by where your thumb and your – index finger meet.
Right.
It depresses that before the trigger will pull. It's like a safety, so it can't be accidentally tripped. Well, the way he was holding it all gangster style, he wasn't depressing that all the way.
The part of between his thumb and it wouldn't squeeze the – oh, my God.
So he's just trying to – and I'm like, well, maybe his gun's jammed. Is he even loaded? You know, I was just – at that point, I'm like, I don't know if I can shoot him. Clearly, I could legally. Yeah. But my brain wasn't processing
it. Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So then he takes off running. Between the two buildings. So I take off after him, and for a moment I'm like, I almost shot him in the back. I was like, well, I should shoot him in the back because
– And end this thing.
Yeah, because I'm afraid now if one of my other buddies runs into him, they're not going to know what's going on. They're going to get – his gun's going to work eventually.
Right.
But then I was like, oh, he's a black guy, and I'm a white guy, and I'm going to shoot him in the back, and then I'm going to be on CNN.
And you thought that while you were chasing
him. Yeah, I totally thought
that. Sure.
And it slowed me down enough. He made the corner. And then I chase after him. When I go around the corner, he's waiting on me. He's trying to shoot again. And so God or somebody up there was like, hey, you're not going to die today. It'll be basically is what I think happened.
So he had how many chances did he have to shoot you?
There were four different instances where I was like, he was pointing at me trying to shoot me.
And I mean, it was Western. He would have shot you in the head, obviously.
Even a missed, you know, who knows. But I couldn't get a shot off at that point because he had gained too much distance and I was running. I was tired.
Right.
And I'm like, there was always a building behind him. And I'm like, well, I'll stray around, could hit a kid through a window.
Sure.
So I'm not going to do that. So I just keep chasing him. And the whole time, at one point, I remember thinking, God damn, man, I'm really like on Comedy Central. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm out here doing this. This is going to fuck everything up.
Instead of drunk history, drunk police chases. Right. Yeah.
So I keep chasing him. He tries to shoot my buddy that pulls up in a car. He takes off around a building, starts to go around another building. So I grab my buddy Brad. He tried to shoot through his car. And I'm like, let's go this way because I don't think he's going to make it over that privacy fence. And on the other side of the privacy fence was a neighborhood of houses. And I'm like, he won't make that privacy fence, so he'll cut back this way. We'll head him off.
Right.
Two other guys followed the way he went. And then by the time we rounded the buildings, we met each other and the guy was gone. So, fuck, he made that fence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know. And then about the time we started walking up to the fence because I'm like, hey, he jumped over here. And we get close to the fence. All of a sudden we heard wham, 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 like five or six rounds from a 45, like right real close to us. And I'm like, shit, he's shooting through the fence. So we all get down. And then we heard somebody screaming. And my buddy took a sneak, like a turkey peek over the top of the fence. And he's like, we got a guy down. So one of our guys. So we pull the fence down. We run back there. And our buddy had shot and killed the bad guy. But in doing so, he had shot himself because they were that close.
Right.
Oh, my God.
He jumped the fence and they were belly to belly fighting for a gun. And when he pushed the guy off, he started firing and he shot his own finger off.
Oh, my God.
So we rendered aid to him and the guy died there. And so after that, I was like,
you know, the perpetrator died.
Yeah. Yeah. He got shot like five times and died. Right.
There. Remember your
holy hell.
Yeah. It was crazy. And so after that, I was like, I'd probably work in an office for
give
a while.
Me a,
I need to file and collate or something. That's what I'm going to
so
do.
From the time you got out of your car till the time he was shot and your buddy accidentally shot himself, how many minutes was that, would you say?
It seemed like forever, but probably in reality, maybe 5 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Four or 5 minutes.
That's
chasing
crazy.
Around the car. And he
– and all that
when
shit,
he told me this –
just
he goes,
chasing.
Yeah, the guy's shooting – I mean, he's doing everything, but there are no bullets. The gun's not firing.
I mean, the one when you turned the corner, that was the one that he would have just blown me away,
I would
have
probably got hit then. And that was –
because you didn't know he was right there.
Right. So then after I analyzed it after the fact, I'm like,
everything seems okay right now, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
After the fact and analyzing and talking with some guys, I'm like, I think I'm too slow for this. You know what I mean? Like, my brain's not as quick as it used to be.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Taking a human life is a big deal to me now. So I'm too slow. You got to be quicker now. Like, SWAT guys are the best at that type of encounter because all they do is train, boom, shoot. If I'm legally able to shoot, I shoot. And it happens that fast. I'm like legally able to shoot, but do I want to shoot?
Well, and then you were saying
that
too,
slowed me down too
and if
much.
I fire around, it goes. I miss him. It goes into a house. Or I mean, that's
I just did too much thinking, to be honest. And it's slow, and that's what gets you killed. And once you hit that point, you got to realize that and be like, I'm going to get hurt if I keep doing this. And I wasn't. So I put myself in an office position for like the last year. So, because I didn't want to be out like that anymore. And I'm not an office person. So I'm like, I'm not going to enjoy this job anymore.
Right.
But I don't want to go out in the field either. And, you know, so that was the demise.
So here we are, and you retired last Wednesday. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That story was insane.
Yeah, it was pretty intense.
It's not a TV show.
It's life, baby.
It happened to this guy right here.
And as it happens all the time, you're like, I can't believe this is happening. You know, it's just weird. Yeah.
I mean, the so closest surreal. I can get to, like, if you've been in a car accident or something, and as it's happening, you're thinking, oh, my God, well, this happened.
Yeah.
Because
like
when I was
in a bad crash, your brain goes through that same
when
stuff.
When I had that crash on 4th of July and you came and helped me like 2 or 3 years ago, when the airbags deployed and you're just sitting there going, did that really happen? Only right. like a million times that.
No, and that's exactly what it felt like, though. It was like, yeah. it's happening, but do I believe it? You know?
Yeah. I can't believe yeah. this is happening, yeah, and yeah. it happened.
Yep. So it's okay. a weird feeling.
Wow.
All right. Oh, my God. Let's take a break here.
Yeah, I just can't remember a story like that where I was just like on the edge of my seat and I was like, just finish the story. Like, I need to know.
And it was real. That's the thing. You know, gosh. All that was real.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, you know what we need? You know what would make us feel better? Let's go out and buy a car. That would make me feel better at TrueCar.com. You know, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from what they call the TrueCar Certified Dealers Network nationwide. You actually see what other people paid for the car you want, so you know what a fair price is going in, and you feel confident. You never really know how much a car costs on a dealer's lot unless you deal with TrueCar. Using the TrueCar app, you can easily find the newer used car you want. TrueCar, with the TrueCar pricing curve, will show you what other people paid in your area for the same car you're looking for. And now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. And once you register with TrueCar.com, you'll see a real price on actual inventory, competitive pricing offered to you only by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network for an actual vehicle on the lot. TrueCar shows their customers all of their available incentives before they arrive at the dealership. And how about these numbers? Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. I know. So you know you're getting a great deal. And is there any worse feeling than standing in the driveway pointing to your brand new car purchase with such pride and some neighbor in quotes coming over, oh, I paid $400 less for that. Yeah, that won't happen if you sign up with TrueCar.com. That's TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, only with TrueCar.com. Okay, that's Todd McComas, stand-up comedian, man about town, and look for him. You're going to tour the country, too, and do comedy, right?
Yeah. ToddComedy.com. There'll be some stuff happening, so you can go there and check it out.
And even in Indy, is it the 16th, 17th, 18th? You and Sean and Bowers.
February 16th through the
18th. I'm going to be there one of those shows.
That's going to be fun.
Social event of the season will be at Morty's, February 16th, 17th, and 18th. Todd McComas, Chris Bowers, and Sean Latham.
It's going to be fun.
All right. Well, thank you, Todd, for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
I appreciate it. And thank you for that that story, and thank you for your service. And I, for one, am glad you're alive.
Now we can all just go be funny.
That's right.
That's right.
That's all we got to do.
Really,
it's easy.
We can really appreciate the day. All right. Thank you, Jason.
You bet.
Thank you, Jeff Fibbert.
Thank you.
JeffFibbert.com. And that's the Chick McGee Show on Podcast One.
Good night, everybody.
Is your basement or garage full of old house paint that you know you'll never use? I know mine is. Avocado green, hot pink, antique white. That is a nice shade of white, though. You know, it's easy to recycle your leftover paint, stain, and varnish all over California. Most paint care drop-off locations are paint and hardware stores that take back leftover paint. Keep what you need and recycle the rest. Find a drop-off site near you at paintcare.org.
Virginia buries its dead. I'm Rita Foley with an AP News Minute. Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe is talking about President Trump's response to the violence in Charlottesville over the weekend at a white supremacist rally.
Those remarks are dividing people. We cannot be dividing people.
Governor McAuliffe told CBS this morning he knows two of the three people who were killed that day.
I have lost three great citizens yesterday, Heather Heyer's funeral. Tomorrow we will have to put to rest Trooper Burke Bates, who had been part of my executive protection detail, and then on Saturday, Lieutenant Jay Cullen, who'd been my pilot. This breaks your heart.
Heather Heyer died when a car rammed a group of protesters. The two Virginia State Troopers were killed while monitoring the rally when their helicopter went down. Prison visitations are off at a state facility or all state facilities in Florida, where they say they have credible intelligence indicating some sort of security threat. There are no details available yet. I'm Rita Foley.